Today, we are discussing one of the hottest topics we talk about, low libido, aka low sex drive. What is low libido? How much sex is normal? What factors affect it? What do you do if you want it, but don't? What can you do to boost your sex drive? We answer all of this and more in this episode. You do not want to miss this one. So grab a nice cup of tea and curl up to listen as we share the lowdown on low libido. Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about.
And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes.
All right, libido. Everybody has a libido, whether it's good or bad. Yes. And I will say too, I feel like it's totally normal for things to change over time, throughout the course of your life, throughout the course of your motherhood journey as well, given pregnancy, postpartum things. So you have your own personal story with libido, which is so amazing. And, you know, as with sometimes when we have struggles in life, we can turn around those struggles and then reduce the suffering of other people. In my way, it was sort of like that with mastitis and postpartum health and mental, you know, postpartum mental health problems. With you, it's been painful sex and libido, and you've really made some revolutionary resources for people to change this and just become such an expert and a voice that like really nobody's talking about this stuff because it's so taboo and weird. So this episode, we're going to talk about what is libido? What is sort of the normal amount of sex drive for women? And are women and men's sex drives different? I feel like everybody does know that answer, but we'll talk about sort of the breakdown of why that may be and categorize it. And the causes. So what are the multitude of causes? And you can do a quick overview of each, knowing that we have other episodes about this as well. You also have an ebook coming out called The Libido Code in case anybody is wanting more information about these topics. And then, you know, what are your sort of top takeaways and nuggets for people to implement now or to be thinking about in a thought experiment type way so that they can wrap their head around some of this information while they're on the lookout for your other resources? Okay, so let's go ahead and get started with just tell our listeners, what is libido?
Yeah, so libido is basically the desire to want to engage in sex play or sexual intercourse, whether that's just foreplay or just intimacy in general. So it isn't arousal, is your body's physiological ability to become sexually stimulated or aroused. You know, maybe you get more vaginal lubrication. Maybe your labia gets more plump. For a man, that's like an erection. Okay. That's arousal.
Okay.
Which is different than libido.
Oh, this is good to know.
Which is the desire to want to do it in the first place.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. So sometimes people interchange those and they'll say, I have low libido. Oh no, I want to have sex. I just can't get like stimulated. That's an arousal issue.
Oh.
Yeah. So libido is like the desire to want it.
To think about it and say, I want to go and have sex with my partner or this person.
Yeah. Or to like feel like turned on or like just, it's more in the head, I would say. Whereas arousal is a little bit more in the body.
Oh, I've heard you say before, libido is between the ears, which I love because it's so, we're mental, emotional beings and we have a lot of brain things that kind of get in the way of our bodies sometimes. Yes. So it's sort of this mind body connection thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, we can get into all of that whole thing of like, you know, sometimes in like rape cases, people will be like, well, you know, were aroused or whatever. And that's like a physiological thing that is different than like, I don't want that just because my body's physiologically responding
is different.
Doesn't mean so libido is like the desire and the want.
Okay.
And there are, so men and women both have libido. There are a small, small subset of people that are like asexual and don't have a libido and are not bothered by that.
Okay.
However, low libido, when people are bothered by the fact that they want to have sex and they don't, and that bothers them, that's when it becomes a problem. So, you know, a lot of people ask me, what is the normal amount of sex? And like, what's your normal amount of libido that I should be having either individually or with my partner?
And a lot of it comes down to what bothers you and or what is bothersome in your partnership.
Right.
So for some people, you know, it's not that like everyone should wake up and want to have sex. And if you're not, there's something wrong with you. Right? And that's just not the case. Libido is a very personal thing.
Yeah.
And where it becomes problematic is when your desire for the want is there, but the want itself is not there. Oh. That makes sense.
Well, and like, I'm thinking, yeah, some couples are totally perfectly happy with a desire to want to have sex once a month.
Yeah.
And some couples are really bothered that they don't want to have sex 3 or 4 times a week. Mm-hmm. And so then that for them is like a low libido issue because they are not, it's out of line with the want for the want.
Exactly. The want for the want. And so where it gets a little tricky is sometimes one partner wants it a lot more than the other.
Yes.
And that is often where it comes up. So sometimes a single woman will come to me and say, you know, I feel like I have low libido. I don't want to have sex, even though she's not even in a partnership. Okay. And that bothers her.
Okay.
Like she wants to want it, but doesn't.
Okay.
Whereas some people don't want to have sex and they're not bothered by it. It's like any personal mental illness where it's like in mental illness, just any mental emotional thing. It's the bothersome of it for the person that is the concern.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because some people live with, you know, functional levels of anxiety or depression or something, and it's not bothering their life. But when it does, that's mm-hmm. when we need to be addressing
yeah,
it.
Yeah. That's when it's more problematic. And so when we talk about libido, there are differences in inherent men and women's approaches as a general, you know,
rule.
However, there are always exceptions and, you know, we don't put men and women in categories, but for the most part, based on our physiology,
yes,
women cycle and have a hormonal rhythm that changes and is basically different every day of the month.
Yeah, fun.
Yeah. So we have kind of a different hormonal profile every day, and that cycle like cycles every 30-ish days, you know,
right,
roughly. And a man has a 24-hour hormonal cycle mm-hmm. that cycles every 24 hours. Okay. So for the most part, his testosterone is high in the morning. This is why a lot of men have a higher sex drive, or maybe they wake up with an erection in the morning, because testosterone is highest in the morning and it kind of dips throughout the day and then resets. For a woman, testosterone, which is one of the hormones involved in libido and sex drive, it really is low on your period, and it starts to creep up a few days after your period as you get closer to ovulation. That's about halfway between your two period leads. And it really spikes and peaks around ovulation, which is when we would naturally be able to get pregnant.
This is all very, you know, we're animals, you guys. Like, this makes total sense.
Yeah.
We would really, it wouldn't be out of the realm of normal for us to really only want sex around ovulation, because mm-hmm. that would be the time that we could become pregnant. And although we are humans and sex is an act of intimacy and connection as well, or fun and pleasure, but on a biological standpoint, sex is an act to reproduce and become pregnant. So we have to just remember that and not make ourselves wrong for not wanting sex, you know, in the porn industry as well, mm-hmm. plays into this. And I know you say, you touch on that a lot, but it all is physiological. It makes so much sense.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a quote by a doctor or a researcher. It says, nothing about women makes sense except in the light of evolution. And
yes.
just like evolutionary biology and things like that, because a lot of things, they don't make sense based on our modern culture, you know, and a lot of certain groups of women get very offended by the fact that we wouldn't want to have sex every single day of the month. And some women do, for sure.
Totally.
But if you don't, it doesn't mean you're abnormal.
No.
So I think a lot of women feel wrong because maybe their male partner does want it every single day.
And which makes sense for them, because they are made and geared towards spreading their seed literally with whoever they can mm-hmm. for the biological purpose of passing along their genetics.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So they have this higher, it's amazing that we even like can make this work between the two of us, because it's so different.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if we talk about evolution and biology, you know, a woman has much more at risk and at stake for engaging in just casual sex.
Yes.
And, you know, a casual sex experience with just a stranger, let's say back in like tribal times or, you know, native culture times before we had a lot of other understandings, a man passing through to have casual sex with a woman has zero repercussions for him really. And is just biologically beneficial to him mm-hmm. to potentially continue on his genetics. A woman, on the other hand, has the potential to become pregnant, which is potentially life-threatening. It's a huge amount of resources. Mm-hmm. She now has that baby growing in her belly. Let's say it's a famine, there aren't a lot of resources, it could kill her or the baby. And then she has that baby for the rest of time with her.
Totally.
You know, our modern culture encourages couples to stay together, and that men, you know, play an active role in rearing children, and many of them want to, but on a biological level, that's not always the case.
Yeah, we just have to be much more protective of this, because it's not just sex for fun and pleasure and orgasms for us. It's a potentially life-changing event.
Mm-hmm. And so from a biological perspective, it's more rare, not impossible, but more rare for a woman to just walk around and have what I call spontaneous desire. And so there's two types of desire patterns. There's spontaneous, and then there's responsive. Spontaneous desire or spontaneous libido is I just wake up, there's no stimulation in my life at all, and I'm just like, want to have sex. You know?
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, and that's a lot of
high school, I feel like. Yes. Remember that.
When you're having raging hormones, yes. You know, people will say that raging hormones, very much spontaneous desire. Or maybe you even walk down the street and like see an attractive person and all of a sudden your juices are flowing and you're like, I have this desire to want to merge with this person, to want to engage intimately with this person. It's spontaneous, you know? Whereas responsive desire is you don't actually have the desire or the want to engage in sexual play until you've actually been stimulated in some way. And so for a woman, a lot of times they need that kind of, you know, brushing of the back of the neck or sweet words or kisses, or, you know, maybe you start kissing and then she's like, yeah, maybe I could want to get into this.
And this is like a gripe, I feel like, that the culture has kind of put around women, like, oh, it takes you so long to get going. It's like, I feel like it's probably on the rarer end that the woman, like you were saying with the spontaneous, even if it's a responsive desire, that responsive desire is not like 5 seconds of responding. No. It's like a 30-minute process. Yes. Or, you know, some length of time. I don't want to put a qualifying number around it to make anybody feel like any one way, but just know that this is on purpose as well, because there's a lot of things for us that we're kind of, you know, has to work up and get the heart rate flow, you know, increase, and all of the plumping of the tissues. It takes literal time. It is not a man can get an erection in like seconds. Mm-hmm. It's just not even possible for us to begin to make vaginal lubrication fluids in seconds. It's not possible.
Correct. So if you look at it from a masculine and feminine dynamic, again, libido and arousal are very much connected. And so that whole like the foreplay getting us, you know, the vaginal lubrication, that is arousal, but that is part of libido for a woman, because the responsive libido, responsive desire often comes once we are already starting arousal. So a man doesn't So a man doesn't even need to be aroused. He can arouse himself through the thought of just like having sex. For a woman, sometimes she needs to have been touched and start the arousal process. And then the desire for sex comes in, where you're like, oh, I want to now have sex with you.
Interesting.
And so it's very confusing, because a lot of times women feel like they have no libido, because a lot of times they actually do need to start the arousal process. It's a responsive pattern. It's the feminine, which is a receiving.
Right.
The masculine is going to initiate the process.
The receiving is
going to then like go deeper into it. And so there's responsive and spontaneous desire, which is something to remember. And so you're not necessarily abnormal if you just have a responsive pattern.
Right.
So if you're like, oh, I don't have a low libido, but as soon as I start to engage in like sexual play, you know, I really like it. That's great. And that's pretty normal. And again, you have the like different hormonal patterns throughout the month. Where it's abnormal is if you really have started trying, or maybe like you literally think about it, there's never a time in your cycle that you ever feel like you want to have sex. Cause a woman can shift from a responsive to more of a spontaneous around that time of ovulation.
Right. That makes sense.
And that's because of testosterone. So if that never happens, then that's kind of an issue. There's also other dynamics that go into play about libido that don't have to do with physiology and biology. And that can be, maybe you've had a trauma and your brain is trying to protect you from, you know, intercourse or sex. And so it turns off any desire for it. Maybe the sexual play that you're trying to engage in with your partner isn't that great.
Yeah.
You know, I use this analogy of crappy cake.
I love your crappy cake analogy. Can you walk us through the crappy cake analogy?
So let's say there's this like beautiful, moist, like decadent, you know, sugar filled, just like whatever amazing cake you can ever imagine.
Buttercream frosting.
Yeah, buttercream. So good. Like
lemon,
your
lavender.
Mouth is like salivating just thinking about it. Like the best cake you've ever had. And then over here is like maybe dry, gluten-free, has no sugar. It's like free of eggs and all the things that make cake cake. And it just like is so gross. And your body, like your mind and your body are not going to crave and seek out and try to find the crappy cake. You don't wake up and be like, all I can think about is this crappy cake. You know, you might about the other cake. You might be like, oh my God, I have to go to this restaurant to find this cake. I love it.
Yes.
But the crappy cake, no, it's, you are not going to inherently have a desire for the crappy cake.
And in this analogy, just to be clear, the crappy cake is bad sex.
Yeah, bad sex, or just maybe your partner doesn't know how to turn you on, or you don't know how to turn yourself on, or you don't know how to get aroused, or it's just not good for you.
Or it's painful.
Or it's painful or whatever. And so your body is inherently not going to crave and desire that.
That makes so much, it's like a positive or negative feedback loop.
Yes, it's a negative feedback loop and positive feedback loop. It's like Pavlov's dog. If anyone studied psychology, you know, we are very trained as mammals and just as creatures to respond to stimuli. And so if it's negative, our brain is not going to crave or desire that. Yeah. And that has its own systemic issues and partners not necessarily understanding how to sexually pleasure a woman. Mm-hmm. Porn does not help because the patterns that are seen in porn sex for the most part are male dominated arousal patterns and not female.
Yeah. And it's, the porn industry is really, really problematic. We can have a whole episode about this, but it's teaching men and little boys from a very young age. And now, and I've been looking into this for my own children and just prevention of, you know, teaching the consent culture to my son and having an open sex positive household where we can talk about these things. And then knowing and being aware of that, the research is showing now that the average age of porn exposure is 9 years old.
Oh my gosh, that's so crazy.
9 years old. Wow. And imagine if you know nothing about sex, and especially if your parents don't talk to you about sex, mm-hmm. and then you see this, and mm-hmm. that is your only, that's your pivotal, like life-changing anchor point of having a concept for what this thing is. Mm-hmm. And porn, because it is a man, you know, male dominated industry, yes, like you said, it's revolved around the way that men desire sex or think that, and then all of the women and the actors, because they are actresses,
yes, they are actresses,
are doing these things that are atypical and not in line with classic, like what actual women what arousal is, or what we like, or what we want to do, or any of this stuff.
Yes, exactly.
So then it just perpetuates, and then these boys grow up, and then they're having this sex pattern, and then the women don't want to have sex with them, and then it's like, whoa, where did you learn this? Oh, from your 15 years of watching porn.
Exactly. So okay. That's their sex education, and so a lot of women, based on their physiology, they don't necessarily know that this is happening, but they don't really want the sex they're given.
Yes.
And men don't know any other way, because it's not that porn is teaching them how women really want to be pleasured.
Right.
And women actually, outside of reproduction, we are designed to be very erogenous species and creatures, like
totally.
Humans in general, and women especially. We are very much designed to have pleasurable sexual experiences.
Right.
So, you know, there are some really amazing hidden gems that a lot of men have no idea about, because
totally.
They would never show that in porn, because it's slow and it's tiring and it has nothing to do with them.
Right. And women, I mean, we're mostly talking about heterosexual sex couples.
Correct.
This. But of course, this is just going, talking about males and females in general. And we're talking about females in this podcast, but you know, there's lesbian relationships, and mm-hmm. obviously there's a lot more understanding about female arousal in a lesbian relationship.
Yes. And a lot of women who are in lesbian relationships or who are bisexual
are a lot more like, satisfied.
They're very satisfied.
Lesbian. Yes, exactly.
Absolutely. Because
and that makes
they
sense.
Understand it.
They know, mm-hmm. They get it. And it's not to say anything, you know, negative against man. It's just that we have to be communicating and talking to our partners
yes.
about this.
Yes.
Don't do that. Do this. Touch me. It's going to take you for a long time of mm-hmm. rubbing my legs before I'm interested in this. And it can be part of like a fun, beautiful thing, but it, because of culture and because of not having any combat against this porn industry, mm-hmm. it's like, well, God, you're needy or your high needs or your blah, 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 blah. It's like, shut up. No, you're not.
Yeah.
This is normal.
Yeah. It's, you know, we have a puritanistic culture that we were based on. So we don't talk about sex.
Yes.
Women are told that they're prude if they're,
or they're dirty and gross.
Yeah. If they're any sort of sexual at all. And then men in their quiet of their alone time are learning, you know, their own version of sex, which isn't inherently good for necessarily their female partners. And so basically libido is this desire for the cake. And so if you have great cake, that's going to be very different. And sometimes women have great cake
and they still don't have the
desire. Okay.
And they want to want the cake. They're like, oh, the cake is so good. And they're looking at their partner and they're like, your cake is great. And I just want to get there.
Yes. And you know, I personally have had a long experience of this and, you know, my husband
has
great cake. you know, and he's learned to make better cake. Like maybe when we first started, it was very porn induced dry cake.
Well, and you were young.
And I was young and he's learned much better cake. And that's how I knew at times where I was like, there is something inherently physiologically wrong with me too, because, you know, we might even have a great sexual experience. I even orgasm amazingly and I still don't want it the next day.
Right.
You know, and so that's kind of where the pathology comes from. So one for women is to just identify what is normal and abnormal, because I think women feel that they're always put in this abnormal category. So one is, you know, do you have misunderstandings in your relationship and your culture? Is your cake gross? Not gross, but just not great. Like a crumbly.
Can we change
cake.
The frosting on the cake and it makes it better? Can we add eggs to the cake and make it better?
Yes. Yes, yeah. We sure can. And that does require communication. And a lot of couples are not taught how to communicate. Humans in general are not taught how to communicate.
And we're taught that it's weird to talk about this particular thing.
Yes.
Or that it's going to offend your partner and that you're telling them that their cake sucks. And it's like, no, let's just talk about ways to make the cake better.
Yeah. Exactly. So you don't need to say your cake sucks. Don't really say that. You just say,
loved it when you added that to the top of the cake.
I love that frosting. That was really great. Or you know what? Like, why don't you try this? You know, why don't you try doing a massage and like rubbing my feet? Like that really turns me on. I really love when you do that. Or, you know, if they ever do anything, positive feedback I find is very, very helpful for people. If you need to bring in constructive criticism on your sexual experience, do it in a gentle way. And I always recommend the compliment sandwich. So say something great, say something that could be changed in a gentle, sweet way, and then say something else very great. And, you know, people in general respond much better to that kind of approach. So that's how you can kind of work on your cake and on misunderstandings. And we can dive deeper into all of these forever. So I'm not going to go too deep into that. So we've talked about a little bit of culture. There's religious programming and culture. There's, you know, misunderstandings, not having great cake. There's also negative associations for some women. So like I mentioned, if you've had pain or trauma, those kind of things are obviously going to make you not want to engage. You know, the analogy I used to use with mine, you know, I've had sexual experiences that weren't my choice. I've had very painful sex. It was like being told my whole life growing up religious that the stove was hot, the stove is going to burn you, the stove being sex. It is going to be the worst thing ever. Don't touch the stove. Then someone forced me to touch the stove and it burned really bad. And then I met someone who I loved who wants me to touch the stove every night.
Oh, that's such a good analogy. That gives me chills all over my whole body. I know. And that's just so heartbreaking.
And it is heartbreaking and it's super sad. And then me thinking, why don't I want to touch the stove?
Yeah. All these other women are touching the stove every night.
They all want to, and it just burns me every time. And just like knowing that my partner might leave me if I don't touch the stove every night. Right. It's very complex.
Or he's, you know, as if he's making you touch the stove and then he doesn't want to hurt you.
No, and he doesn't want me to touch the stove, but then it's like his needs are for me to touch the stove. It's like, it's a really complicated situation. And, you know, my husband never left me, but you know, it's very complex. And a lot of my patients who I deal with low libido, there are relationship tensions because of it.
100%. The unmet needs. And it's less likely for a man to have a lower libido, although
it does happen.
Low testosterone. Mm-hmm. And as it's becoming more and more of a problem, testosterone rates are dropping off like the face of the planet in men. Mm-hmm. So it's not that this is an isolated issue, but we are obviously speaking to women in this podcast.
So men can totally have low libido. Yes. And I have had low libido male patients. And a lot of times that does coincide with fertility issues because testosterone is the hormone that makes you have a libido and arousal, like erectile dysfunction can be an issue as well. Mm-hmm. Also what makes sperm. So if you are in a couple relationship, because sometimes the woman wants sex more than the man.
Yeah.
And that is like the dynamic issue. If that's the case, I highly recommend not ignoring it, because if you do want to have children someday, it's a big clear sign that your partner might have a hard time having children.
Yeah. Maybe has some suboptimal sperm. situations going on in there.
So that's an aside. You know, the other piece with libido is just the loss of a woman's like connection to her inner goddess. And this is cultural in that women often inherently, we just don't know how to tap into our own inherent sexuality. And this is really big with birth of like our inner goddess, our inner power, and just connecting with that. You know, we're very passive, I would say, as a culture of women, in the sense that we're kind of told by industry, by religion, by the media, how we should be.
We're criticized on every angle. No matter what we do.
Yeah. You're a slut.
Oh, yeah. You like your sex? You're a slut.
Yeah. Oh, you don't? You're a prude. You're too fat. You're too thin. You need to do it this way. You need to, you know, whatever. And it's really hard for a woman to have an internal compass of like, how can I connect to like me as a person, what I love, what I want, and like, how do I connect without a partner? A lot of women, not every woman, there are these exceptions, but a lot of women sort of their sexual relationship is in a partnership. Only. They don't have a sexual relationship alone.
Right. And that's how we learn about our bodies. There's that really good book, Come As You Are.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Yeah, that pink book. It's called Come As You Are. Yeah, there it is.
I think I've done all the libido books.
Yeah, and it's just the idea. I mean, and this comes, we've been just shamed forever that you're dirty, you don't touch that, whatever. Mm-hmm. There's lots of different reasons why we think this. But if you cannot identify for your own self what is going to arouse you, what things you like, what things you don't, how to get there, how on earth could you expect your partner to give you good cake?
Yeah, exactly.
You don't even know how to make the cake.
Yeah, you're not giving him a good recipe.
Yes.
Like, he can bake a great cake if you give him the right recipe.
Yes. And often our partners are really receptive. They want to please us. We want to be in this connective, beautiful, you know, and sex can be this like really intimate, amazing, you know, kind of getting into like different astral plane, you know, whatever experience as a human. And it is just sad that there's so much lack of that in couples for these simple reasons of just communication or knowing yourself. And it's from all of this crappy cultural stuff that we have to deal with and unpack and go to therapy. Therapy is the big, everybody needs to be in therapy.
Yeah. Therapy, releasing trauma, especially if you've had that, even growing up religious in certain sectors, if they made sex very shameful, which was very much the culture I grew up in, that's a lot of really deep programming.
Yes.
That you from might
little,
not even,
little girls.
From little girls.
Don't touch that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Private parts. Like, that is not,
calling private part. I mean, I'm so passionate about this. Like, not even allowing people to little girls and boys to call their private parts a penis or a vulva.
Right.
Because it puts a connotation. They start to learn very early on. Yeah. There's something wrong with
this
area.
Yep. Very much so. And so there's just so much programming there that needs to be unpacked for many women and men too. And even making them feel shameful for masturbation, you know?
Exactly.
And like, I've had experiences in the past with boyfriends or whatever, where like just the shame and the repentance and just like the horrible negative associations. It's so sad. And I'm not saying we should all run around having sex with everything and everybody.
No, of course not. But it's a normal, healthy.
But there is a healthy approach.
Yes.
Yeah. So within that, when we talk about relationships in general, there is the cultural misunderstanding. We've talked about all of that. There's also dynamics within you, with you and your partner, that can change and shift. So one of the biggest, which we'll go into in a later podcast, is the masculine and feminine dynamic. David Data is a really wonderful author who speaks about this, in that everything in the world has a polarity of feminine and masculine. You know, nature is very feminine. There are elements within nature that are feminine and masculine. And at the essence of it, masculine is structure, it's control, it's rigidity, it's death, it's containers, it's boundaries. It's the giving, you know, anything that has that. So our calendar is very masculine.
Yes, totally.
It has.
Because it's putting numbers and boxes and time and rules.
And deadlines and rules. Yep. Lists are very masculine.
And this has nothing to do with gender.
Yes, this has
masculine
nothing to do with
is
gender.
The yang, you know, the yin yang symbol. If you wanted to think about it in like a different cultural sense, that's the TCM, that like traditional Chinese or the Asian cultures use the yin yang symbol. Yin is feminine, yang is male, or masculine rather. And it has nothing to do with, you can have a very masculine woman or feminine man.
Yes.
It has nothing to do with that.
Nothing
it's just,
to do
these
with
are
gender.
Just energy polarities. Okay. So
And I wish there were different names. So maybe I should use yin and yang, but some people are like, what? That just sounds like a cliche on a necklace.
Yeah. On a necklace. Or a mood ring.
Yeah.
We're good. Okay. So just to have that clarified, because I don't want that to be a trigger.
Yes.
And we're not talking about this in a gendered sense. It's just an energy that everybody has, a components, and, and they shift and they change even throughout the month, which is even trickier.
Yeah, it is trickier, but it's, again, this should be in our course. We're going to design a course for the people everyone should have, like all of the women in the whole world should have.
And men, everybody.
And men. To understand these concepts. And so the masculine is essentially the giving energy and the feminine is the receiving energy. And so, you know, you could think of a soil as the feminine and the seed that you're planting as the masculine. You know, the soil is receiving the seed, the masculine is the seed that's being planted. You know, it's like everything can be.
Well, and so then with that said, there is something inherently masculine about a male who is ejaculating into a female body with the seed and the feminine or energy of the body, the female body and the uterus, accepting that semen, bringing it up into the uterus and fertilizing it. So like that is an inherently there, there's more like a clear delineation there in that aspect.
But everything it can happen. Same sex couples, even
everything else has a fluidity to it.
Yes, exactly. And so masculine and feminine dynamics are important because when we're talking about desire, oftentimes the desire exists when there is a strong opposite of that polarity.
Magnets. So
let me describe an example. Let's say we do have a heterosexual couple of a man and a woman, and the classic like toxic masculinity and toxic femininity that people will talk about is maybe portrayed in like a 1950s sitcom where there's like an aggressive man who like has big muscles and he like comes home and kind of talks to his wife in a condescending way.
Make me dinner. What's for dinner?
Wife, you know, and she's like, oh my God, like whatever you want.
Leave it to Denver.
Yeah. She's just like, like she has no like say, she's just receiving whatever he is telling her.
And submissive
she's
and passive.
Very submissive and passive. And I'm not to say that any of these traits are wrong, but I'm characterizing it in an extreme to kind of show you that. But they got together and probably really love each other on even a sexual dynamic because she's very passive and very feminine and very like
receiving,
but in like a most toxic way, or, you know, like
it's pathological in this example.
Yes, pathological. And then he's very predominant and masculine in that, but because they were attracted to each other in a healthy masculine and feminine dynamic relationship. Nowadays, let's say, you know, maybe there is a man, I'll do different examples. Maybe there's a man who, you know, is like my husband. He's very much a provider. He loves to work out. He has big muscles. He is very like in charge of certain things and, you know, all of that. But he also has a feminine element to him of like a gentleness. And he loves to like receive, you know, the love from like our daughter and like all of these things. And then we're just really balanced. Okay. So I'm kind of getting off track. So let's just imagine a female on the flip side, a more masculine female in today's culture would maybe be a woman who's a CEO of a company or really loves to work, is very like, you know, the classic boss lady, or just someone who really loves structure, really loves to be kind of in control or likes to take charge and, you know, kind of has more of that, you know,
masculine energy.
Again, the things that people would hear in culture, oh, she wears the pants, you know,
et
cetera, you know, that kind of stuff. It's not good or bad. I'm just kind of painting the picture for you. And maybe more of a feminine male on the feminine energy would be, you know, someone who's like an artist who really loves to like paint and, you know, is very gentle, like, you know, isn't necessarily going to be like talking about.
Well, and he's like, maybe more go with the flow about the decisions, you know, like, honey, what do you want to have for dinner? And she's like, I want to have this. And it's like, okay.
And he's like, okay, cool.
And this is just the, where the dynamics are so different that they work really well because it's like opposites of a magnet, the positive, the negative end. And then they shoot and they fit together. Yes. When you have two of the same, if you have a masculine male and female, it's, they're going to repel each other. Mm-hmm. It's too much.
Who's going to be in charge? Who's going to decide where who goes? Like, there's always going to be someone. It's not ever bad.
It needs to be different though.
Yes, exactly. And sometimes couples are very, very balanced and where they have both attributes in a very, very balanced way.
But still within that, it would be opposite in the ways where it matters.
Yes, exactly. Because otherwise you wouldn't be attracted to each other.
I feel like that's my husband and I. We're both like, we are too. Yeah. And you guys as well. Like I would say maybe I lean a little bit more feminine, but I wouldn't consider myself ultra feminine. I actually think you're pretty.
Yeah, I'm pretty feminine.
But you have a masculine inside you with business.
Oh, things. Totally.
You're amazing.
Like,
it's
very like,
and I don't have
And my husband's like, I don't have a calendar. I don't have a schedule.
Exactly.
Like,
and my husband too, in some ways he's like that, but then he's got that provider role, whatever.
Yes. And so in the bedroom, why it's important is people ultimately have their essences that they're born with. Culture can shift and tweak them. You shift within a day, you know, you can be a different dynamic, or with certain categories, you could be on the more masculine, more feminine. It's a dance that you're in a relationship with a sexual
constantly
partner.
Constantly fluid and changing. It's almost like those, you know, you see those like graphics that are like the beat of a music, and it's kind of like moving and shifting like this all the time.
Yeah.
And it's, and we need to have this awareness so we can be into it. And also like recognize that, yeah, sometimes you're going to go and have the cake and it's like really good. Mm-hmm. And who knows why, maybe there's multifactorial, but probably one of those elements is that you guys were in a deeper polarity. There was a bigger polarity there between your energies in this way, so that when it came together, it was just so good. And then sometimes you'll have the cake and you're just like, okay, it was all right, but like it wasn't that great. Or maybe it just, there was a little bit more kinky, or like not kinky. Maybe there were some kinks in the flow of it, and it just didn't really flow as well. And potentially it could be because you guys were both in maybe predominantly in the same energy.
Maybe you're both trying to schedule the kids things, or like the
you're both in the masculine. Yes.
And so in the bedroom, this polarity is very important, regardless of what your essence is or your personality or how you are outside of the bedroom. The interesting thing is to know who you are in the bedroom. And for some people, it's the same. Like you always play the feminine role. Like for example, how would you would know? And what I always tell my couples is, if you are someone who likes to give sexually, that's more of the masculine. If you like to give head, if you like to do lap dances, if you like to kind of like dance in front of them or kind of push them down on the bed and like jump on top, you like to ride them, you know, that kind of thing. That's very much the masculine.
Or you're the one that's like initiating too.
Yes. Or you're the initiator. And then if you're more of the one that likes to receive, you're the one that like wants to be pushed down and
take me.
And again, like this can be masculine or male or female.
So a lot of men like to be,
my husband likes to be the feminine role in the bedroom. A lot of the time, you know, he wants me to take charge, push him down, like jump on top. And a lot of that is in some ways because of the porn industry. I think a lot of the behaviors that happen are the man in the receiving role, because it's like the woman is performing and she's acting, you know, if you go to, you know, strip clubs and stuff, it's a lot of it is the man's just receiving.
And maybe because it's kind of like less typical as well.
Yeah. And it's like, everyone's different. It could just be who someone is, and it can change, you know. Sometimes my husband can definitely shift into that role. And so what we discovered is that we both like to be in the feminine. And so it's like, someone's got to shift into the masculine. And even within one sexual encounter, it can switch back and forth.
And so
just being mindful of that, because a lot of people with low libido or arousal issues in general is because, you know, you're maybe both stuck in the same dynamic. It's too close together and you need to create more of that polarity.
Yeah.
And again, this kind of sounds abstract. Maybe for some people, there's a lot more to dive into it.
It's really not. And that book is so good by David Data.
Yeah. David Data is a great book. And, you know, I have resources on this too. So just being aware of some of these dynamics, of hopefully this piqued your curiosity.
And usually too, you notice this in your relationship in general, like you're inherently attracted to certain qualities in a partner for a reason. And if you categorize it in your mind, you can usually try to, you know, see and figure out, oh, am I attracted to the masculine aspects of this person or the feminine aspects of this person, regardless of if you're in heterosexual or, whatever. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It applies to same sex.
Homosexual relationship, 100%. It does not matter. Yeah. It's the same thing. It's just the polarity between the two people and the way you're bringing your energy in together. And sex is a very energetic exchange.
It's very energetic.
And so this is probably like a humongous aspect.
It's a humongous. So that's the energetic part. And then, so to talk about hormones, you know, we've mentioned cultural, we've mentioned trauma, negative programming, all of that. We've talked about dynamics. Sometimes it is a hormonal imbalance.
Yep.
And this is often what everyone just assumes it is.
Yeah.
So everyone who has hormonal or libido is always like, oh, there must be something wrong with my hormones. And sometimes there is, and sometimes it's these other things. And sometimes those other things affect the hormones, you know, it can be a side effect.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So on an inherent level, you know, the best thing you can do is check your hormones and just see. The big ones you want to look at are testosterone, estrogen, prolactin. So if your prolactin's high, this is what's high when you're breastfeeding. It can also be high for some women who are not breastfeeding, and it can be high in men too.
And it's high. The reason why high prolactin would affect your libido is because of the hormone that's produced, you know, causing the production of breast milk. In the state of a woman producing breast milk, she is usually taking care of a little baby and needs to provide for that little baby and not get pregnant again. And so the libido is inherently, this is protective of that newborn. Even if the baby's like 2 or 3, you're still breastfeeding and you still have higher prolactin levels. Usually they drop off the less and less that you're breastfeeding throughout the day, but there's a purpose for this and it's a good thing, but we need to understand our biology and physiology and use it in our modern day and be like, okay, well, this is, you know, my baby's 18 months old, 2 years, whatever, I can get pregnant now. It's okay. But like, just getting that when you're breastfeeding, a lot of women do not have a libido that's normal. And the second that they wean, they kind of feel like themselves again.
Yeah. And we talk about this in our sex after, you know, postpartum sex episode. So we can dive deeper into that if you go there, but essentially check your hormones. If you're on birth control, this is something that can inherently lower your hormones because that's literally what it's doing.
It's like mimicking a state of pregnancy sort of, and it's reducing that cyclical ovulation, which is where we would have our natural spike.
Yeah. Where libido. I talked about the spike of testosterone with libido. And then a lot of birth controls actually on purpose are designed to stop production of testosterone and to bind it up.
Why?
Because it cures acne. Well, it covers up acne.
Covers up.
So a lot of times people who start birth control is because of acne. Yeah. And so the mechanism of some of the progestins in birth control inherently lower testosterone. However, some women like me were put on birth control to lower testosterone when I did not have high testosterone, and that can completely tank your libido. Birth control can also raise what's called sex hormone binding globulin, which binds up your testosterone, and that can also impact libido. So if you're on birth control, inherently know that that's probably a very strong risk factor and potentially consider taking a break from it. If you're not checking your hormones, your estrogen, your prolactin, your testosterone as just the baseline, and knowing that stress is one of the biggest killers for everything in the body, and libido is no different.
Yeah.
So inherently, we've talked about this with birth, with pooping, you have a type of nervous system, your parasympathetic nervous system that rules rest, digest, and sex.
And birth.
And if you are stressed, you know, it's like a light dimmer. If you're stressed, the dimmer goes down on the nervous system that rules those principles, you know, and it goes up on the stress part of that nervous system. And inherently they can't both be up or down at the same time. There's always going to be an alternating
balance.
So if you're stressed, if you're pumping out of cortisol, you're not sleeping well, you're just monkey mind, you know, it is going to turn off the pathways, the hormones, the neurotransmitters, the blood flow, all the things that are involved in you inherently wanting to engage in sexuality.
And that's protective as well. Just so we understand why this happens is because if you're, say, you know, back in the day before modern culture, there is some kind of, your village is picking up and moving to a different location. There's less food available. There are predators or some sort of danger. And you're more in this sympathetic nervous system. It's not a good time to be having sex and getting pregnant.
No.
Now, remember, we have to think in a biological sense, sex is for pregnancy. We also as humans and some other animals have sex for pleasure as well. But it just makes so much sense, I think, to root people back to like the why things are happening this way and stress. I feel like sometimes it's said too much. And so then it loses meaning. People are like, oh yeah, I'm stressed, whatever, blah, 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 blah. It's like, no, you really need to understand the impact and toll that this is taking on our bodies.
Yeah.
So that's why, especially with women, we are so in our heads. And if we can get out of our head and we get really comfortable, we feel super safe. And then we have a long, slow foreplay, then it like all of these things have to, the stars have to align for us to feel interested in this highly expensive in terms of being able to, you know, potentially ending up in a pregnancy event and situation. And now we can sort of know this in our prefrontal cortex and use this in our brains and be like, but okay, calm down. Like, I know that that's not going to happen, whatever, but just, it is an interplay physiologically. We have to be using our factors in our minds and knowing all of these different things. I think it's helpful for building this basis because people are just, this is just the way I am and I'm screwed up and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
No.
And so the things I want to leave people with on this episode is, one, libido and sex is so complex and so complicated. And it's not often just there's something wrong with me or something right with me.
Yeah.
There's a lot to investigate. There can be inherent issues. that can be on every single plane, from biology, physiology, hormones, trauma, past trauma, relationships, dynamics, energetics. I mean, there's so many parts to talk
good
about.
Good thing you have a book about this.
Because, good thing. And so to one, not internalize that there's necessarily anything wrong with you, but it's more you need a guidebook, or you need to understand how to navigate this kind of complicated world and how to figure out how to work within it, so that you potentially can identify if there really is truly something wrong, like a hormonal imbalance, yeah, or like something like that,
or being maybe postpartum or something,
or being postpartum, or if there's like a relationship issue that needs to be worked on or whatever. And so I think a lot of women just accept that low libido, I've been told this by many doctors, low libido is just being a woman. Welcome to womanhood. Oh yeah.
Oh.
And it's like that.
We should make a list of all the horrible patriarchal things women are told.
I have a long list.
I have a long list when it relates to birth as well.
Totally do it.
Failure of progression.
I know. Seriously. It's just like, so we need as women to understand how to navigate and how it changes throughout the seasons of our life. You know, our libido might be different when we are on birth control in college versus when we're like newly with our new novel relationship, you know, versus postpartum. We just had a baby, and like, knowing all the different stages of libido and how to navigate and know the whys around it and what to do about it. So like I said, this topic is so huge. I'm writing a book on this. And so go to my website if you want the resources, womanhoodwellness.com, but really take the steps, look at your hormones, look at the parts that you can easily look at, and then start to dive into this and know that you're not broken and that there's a solution. And I am a success story.
Yes.
I'm so happy to finally say that after so, so many years, yeah, and understandings and knowings. And it's not like I wake up every day like, oh my God, let's have sex.
Yeah, but I understand. It's not a problem for you anymore. That's what we were talking about in the beginning. It's like you're having the amount of libido and drive and want that is feeling good for you now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whereas beforehand it was causing like a lot of stress because
Exactly. So yeah, that's what I want to say.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you guys.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for other women to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content.
We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.
Please remember that the ideas and views presented in this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. Now go have a wonderful day. You've got this.